things. And, well, as usual, first, I want to say that I'm grateful to the organizers that give me the opportunity to talk here. Well, and also do some heavy lifting with moving furniture upstairs. We heard a lot about how to make reference frames. I'd like to talk about how to try and deliver the data. And many of the results, probably most of the results I'm going to present, are not only by me and Steve, but also the Ruder, Rob Smith, and Rekhan Olimpia. Let's start from the outline. It will be a bit misleading, but just transfer some information. Of course, I start from introduction. And in introduction, we talk about reference frames, errors that have when there are none, and also about relativistic state transformations and some necessary background that we need to appreciate. Well, of course, I'm not going to speak how to make real humans. I'm going to tell it from the theoretician's point of view, what constitutes a good enough human. Well, then we can move to the encoding. And we talk about how to encode massive particles and how to encode photons. And at the very end, summary and disclosure of emissions and cheating. And again, first disclosure is already now. In my talk, the introduction will take about two-thirds of the total time, probably more. Well, traditional information, reference frames are important. If we have qubits, we have to know with respect to what we say up and down. So if we want to communicate, both parties have to have shared reference frame, or they need to do something to share. If we take this classical information away, then life becomes much more complicated, as at least some point of view, communication becomes impossible. If I send a qubit and there is no shared reference frame, Bob doesn't know what Alice sends to me. So his description of this qubit becomes maximally mixed state. So no shared reference frame, no information transmission in one qubit. And, well, trying to be more sophisticated and to say the same thing, but in scientific language, we can consider the lack of shared reference frame as a particular or peculiar form of experience. But if it's so, we can try and fight it with the peaks that are already known, or we can try and adapt them. So, another lecture, in a certain sense, on the benefits of reduced representations and And this is based mainly on the Kizerev Letters paper by Steve, Rob, and Terry. So let's start simple. Two qubits, no shared reference frame, but essentially these two qubits undergo a collective disappearance. They suffer the same rotations. Omegas are the same here and there. So even if there is some sort of decoherence, not everything is lost. Moreover, we have two invariant subspaces, subspace of zero angular momentum and subspace of angular momentum one, and they don't mix. So we can encode two classical interactions, two classical states. So we can use two qubits to encode one bit. We can try and get more sophisticated, so we go higher. And even numbers are simpler than odd numbers, so we go to the simplest case of 4. Here we have this nice decomposition, and that means we can encode 4 qubits. And we can go even a bit more sophisticated. We go from n qubits, we count the number of invariant subspaces, take their log, get a result, pretty good result. Asymptotically, we can use it. If we decompose the thing, we see that asymptotically, we can use one qubit to transmit one bit of information. And well, I call it a bit result for dummies, because it's a solution to the problem that nobody's actually interested in. We can just, you know, talk by phone instead of going through all this trouble and making more and more entangled states. But this exercise gives us some ideas how we can work and encode quantum approach. This is an interesting part of the story. So let's look again for qubits and write the decomposition. And this decomposition, we have twice angular momentum, invariant subspace of zero angular momentum, one dimensional. So everything that can happen to you is to get phase. Again, rotation is the same rotation, so phase is the same for both spectrums. And that means we can encode one qubit by using four, even if we have no shared reference frame. We just produce two different states of zero angular momentum, and we have our logical zero and logical one, because the assignment is arbitrary. And well, okay, as quantum information theorists get the result, its next ambition or next attempt is to see how you can take it and make us look at the asymptotics. And asymptotics is, again, is fairly good. Eventually, as these guys showed, we can use one-to-one encoding. Asymptotically, we need only one qubit without reference frame to encode one qubit for a non-logical qubit. Okay, you know, free lunch theory, there is no such thing as free lunch, so we have four. And in this case, we have a price to pay. We sort of lose an identity of our relation between subspaces, variant subspaces, and qubits that we are going to use. For example, 3-to-1. Actually, we need only three qubits to encode one. Let's look again at the decomposition. We have two subspaces of spin 1/2 and subspace of 3/2. The last one is not interesting, so let's look on these two, which are the simplest case of invariant subsystem. Very sophisticated. Two plus two equals two times two, something that kids learn at a very early age. But here, it stands for something more deep and more fundamental. This pinkish magenta thing is the one and only copy of the irreducible representation of this certain angular momentum, in this case, 1/2. And this is the space of the multiplicities. And following the general results on invariant subsystems, we can see that the action of our unitary on that subspace can be also very nicely split into direct product four. Okay. Plus product. And on the subspace of the multiplicities, we have an identity operator. So if we don't know the rotation, part of the story, part of the subsystem becomes completely mixed and totally messy. But this one, this part, is perfect. So if we have our information encoded into the green qubit, then it is preserved. And again, we can transmit quantum information without having shared reference. So see why these things are nesting. Okay, let's try and do it explicitly. This is exactly the thing Taylor used to tell me how these states, logical states, look like. And frankly, I didn't realize it was just because they've been too lazy to calculate them. So, in another change of labeling, basis states is labeled by one copy of angular momentum states and multiplicity labels. And for example, we can use for encoding these things, logical 0, logical 1. Actually, the interesting part is they can be multiplied by anything. The only thing that the only requirement is that this anything is the same both from 0 and 1. And it doesn't have to be actually a pure state or any different state between tools and anyway. But for one particular qubit, is our logical basis of this 3-to-1 encoding. After we have a coherence, this thing looks really messy, and I'm not going to write it up. So just slogan, ignorance is power, and this is what happens. This is the interesting part. Direct product with uninteresting part. And direct sum with another uninteresting part. Both uninteresting parts heroically died in the process and became maximally mixed. But this thing remains, persists, and our information is imported there. Again, the only problem, it's not so obvious how to do the practice. Even it's not so obvious how to write the operators. Of course, there are finite procedures that there occurs. However, asymptotically, we're doing pretty well, one qubit to one qubit. So if ignorance is not a power, well, at least it's some sort of software. And now, second half of the introduction. So, you know, I promised you that the introduction will be a lengthy one, and we are still here. Let's learn about more types of decoherence. Now, oh, well, all the nasty things that Lorentz transformation do for your good qubits that you always wanted to ask and been too embarrassed to do so. So, a crash course on what happens. And to make life simpler, but not very simple, we work with basis states. So we label states by momentum and the discrete label, which may be helicity, maybe spin, depending on what sort of particles I am dealing with. Under Lorentz transformation, okay, I know that half of the audience became, if they became bored up to now, they will become bored at this stage because they do these things many times and probably eventually forget them once or twice in the course of their scientific lives. But this stuff is important. So, a bonus, we will look at Lorentz transformation as a quantum sort. What happens at the end? So what happens is, we can describe it in several steps and we go through these steps in a moment. But now, momentum just transforms rotation or Lorentz pulse or some combination of them. And discrete label gets acted upon by some unitary matter. That unitary matrix is a representation of certain sub-Lorentz group, which is stability group, Wigner little group, or any other name you care to use, and it's pretty messy job of calculating. So now let's do it step by step. Well, what I'm trying to do now is very lengthy and messy way of describing the induced representation. So the first step. We define what are the standard states and standard Lorentz transformation. For massive particles, it's pretty obvious. We take states of zero momentum, so in the rest frame, as a standard state. For massless particles, we have no rest reference frame, so we take photon moving in z direction with some velocity. Then we define a standard Lorentz transformation. This is the transformation that takes standard momentum by once and for all given procedure to any desired value of this momentum. And here, of course, becomes interesting because different authors use different conventions, and even if they use the same conventions for standard states, they use different conventions for the standard Lorentz transformations. But let's stick to some convention. And then from here we get to the state convention. If we take state with standard momentum and certain spin and Lorentz transform it by standard transformation, we have state with this yellow momentum and the same discrete label. This is an essential point in whole introduction. So we define preferred states, define the preferred family of transformations. They are used to set up phase conventions, basis conventions, and we decompose everything else with respect to them. Well, so natural step number three, is what to do with arbitrary transformations. And the easiest way to get it is just to do nothing for several steps. Doing nothing, being lazy in a genius way, is actually, a primary mover of the progress. So I do nothing. I just group property, group representation property. I keep doing nothing again. I multiply it by identity. And I'm going to do nothing for two more steps. Just move it. But now, as you see in a moment, this thing is exactly the chunk which we called W, the element of the stability group. What happened? The first unitary doesn't change particle standard momentum. And why so? We start from standard, go to the desired value, then Lorentz transform, then go back. So everything that may happen is just action on the discrete degrees of freedom. On the other hand, the first unit, this one, represents a standard transformation. And this standard transformation, okay, changes momentum, but keeps the discrete place. Fine. So the only thing that is left is to find the representation for the stability. And of course, mathematicians have a lot of cases. We are interested only in two. Massless particles, which quantum. I don't know about quantum information between neutrinos. There is most recent update in physics of massless. So photons and massless particles. For photons, okay. For massive particles. Spin, it's easy to show that the stability group is just rotation group. So for spin 1/2 particles, we have just usual unitary representations with Pauli matrices. And the only unusual thing is that now, what happens to spin depends not only on classical information, but also on the momentum. And depends in different ways. So, for different values of momenta, different transformations. Now, what happens to photons? What happens to photons is, well, on one hand simpler, on one hand more complicated. It is simpler because helicity is Lorentz invariant. So, the right-handed or left-handed states. The only thing that may happen to them is they get phase. This is a simple part. The bad news are that this phase will depend on particle's momentum practically always, even for rotations if they are not along the momentum direction. And to calculate this phase explicitly, Weinberg once called it just some complicated function and was decided that it has no time for calculating this. Sometimes you have to do it, and there are different decompositions, and of course very simple mathematical procedures, but not very obvious answers if you want to give them glance. So, a summary of this particular part of the introduction. What Lorentz transformation do to discrete labels, and I think that we want to make the quantum information into discrete labels as carriers of unordered information, depends usually on both classical information and momentum. For massive particles, if we work with rotation, we can forget about momentum. But if we add also Lorentz transform, general Lorentz transformations, we have to remember about momentum and the shape of the wave length. If we work with photons, sorry, folks, we have to remember about momentum always. And there are some formulas, more or less complicated to see. So after this introductory part, let's go and make some cubes. Ah, sorry. I promised this more bad news. So after we learned about Lorentz transformations, we have to think about the spoiling of qubits by these Lorentz transformations. So what may happen to the qubit if you look at this quantum circle? Okay, first, as I told you, the rotation for momentum eigenstates. So the discrete label gets changed even if you perfectly know everything, and you have to somehow compensate. if you don't know what is your Lorentz transformation, of course you're going to have the coherence in the same or in the worst fashion we've seen before. And the third feature is what happens because of spin momentum entanglement. Usually states are of this form. If for mesh particles they can be split into direct product of spin momentum in one frame, that means in other frames it will not be so. And as you remember, different components of momentum give different transformation for spins, even for the same Lorentz transformation. So we have an additional type of decoherence, a decoherence from spin momentum entanglement. Well, and mostly we are going to ignore it. In this talk, we're going to deal mainly with these things. Well, now how to make qubits. Our objective to readily adapt the results on invariant subsystems, subspaces, or lack of shared reference frame is to get distinguishable qubits. So we need sharp momentum to be free of worries about momentum entanglement. And we need sharp localization to get distinguishable particles. These requirements are not so contradictory as they may look at the first glance. So again, let's make it simple. Case splitting the momentum and some profile and direct product with some spin state. We just translate particles. Now, for simplicity, we take the momentum profiles as Gaussian shapes, centered on zero, so we can approximate the rest frame. This spread is pretty small. Epsilon is a pretty small number. Oh, well. Usually I use units h bars equals c equals g equals k equals pi equals e equals 1, but sometimes I restore natural units. If we take an inner product translated and an original state, we have a lot of chunk, but again, for low energies, we can get a very nice expression. And this is the most important dominant part. So basically, what we have to have is that move particles much further than not just their Compton wavelengths, but Compton wavelengths multiplied by this spectrum. And we can do it. Like for very, for example, for very cold massive particles, we can trap them in optical lattice and we can satisfy both of these conditions. But how to do it in the lab is of course somebody in the audience, me. Okay, and the warning sign. Since we know how to make sharp qubits with sharp momentum, we're going to forget about the spreading momentum for the rest of this talk. Well, not exactly for the rest of this talk, till the part, when I start to confess. So, from now on, until the later warning, our state psi is just product. Some spinner times momentum minus. Yeah?
You have to get a very sharp momentum state. Is it the only way to recover it, or do you have a special shape that would actually
We can fight even if we have some other shapes. But if we have very sharp momentum, we can fight without knowing what is the exact shape and without knowing what is the Lorentz transformation. Spin momentum entanglement and decoherence follows from it. We'll see it in the end. It looks like we need to get more information. We can do it blind. Again, from now on, we work with this nice, simple state. So finally, we can get to the encoding. And after all this introduction, I hope that you say that what follows is trivial, because we made everything which is needed to adapt with previous techniques, and we learned about these techniques. So now it's really 2 plus 2 equals 4. We have approximately direct product. We have exactly direct product of unitary transformations. And now we're going to use the fact that all particles are with the same momentum, and this momentum is sharp. I can forget about this momentum. So when I write the decoherence operator for my particles, my system of qubits. I don't have to worry about the dependence on momentum. What is different from the case of chest rotation is this function f. Well, Lorentz group, as everybody knows, is non-conic. So to first to make this integral converge, I have some great factor for this distribution. On the other hand, it also, it's not really true that we don't know anything about our, not only orientation, but also velocities. So it should represent some prior knowledge about relation between his reference brain and Ellis's reference brain. The good thing is that while we are work with sharp momentum, this thing is an important and its precise form does have concerns. So, generalities. Now let's go to the encoding itself. Remember this, and remember that the only part which we really care is what acts on speeds, what acts on the discrete labels. Let's think about them as speeds of work with massive particles. Okay, so here we have some rotation, because for massive particles, the stability group is just S3. So it's just some nasty rotation that depends on Lorentz transformation and depends on the momentum. So we again here have this function which is induced by the probability distribution of Lorentz transformation. But the good thing is that now we can take the worst case scenario. We are in comfortable. So the worst case scenario, we know nothing. We care nothing. We think that everything is very bad as it can be. Then we are just in the case of rotation and a known reference frame. So we can use standard encodings. We can do our 4-to-1, 3-to-1, or whatever scheme is feasible. So, in the approximation of sharp momentum, Lorentz transformation and ignorance about this Lorentz transformation doesn't make our life worse. Okay, so far, but I don't really think that people are going to do a lot of flying qubits from mass particles. So let's think about photons and how to encode photons. Okay, first thing, guys, please remember, these guys, chill. They made a paper about qubits and rotation. But only massive qubits, really rotation. Photons take phases. Phases are nasty. So this is the bad part. The good part is that with photons we can do better. With photons we don't have to care about necessary stuff. We have the direction of momentum. This is a preserved. Sort of having shared direction. So we can do 2-to-1 photon coding. Because okay, plus states get one phase, minus states get the opposite phase. Still, we don't have to worry. Now, why these states are entangled? I don't know. I think Nathaniel is responsible for that. But what will happen? Whatever the choice of basis states, the linear superposition will be entangled. So, probably whatever is feasible to do can serve as 0 and 1. So, we don't have to worry about it. So, if we have photons and we can think about them as having sharp momentum, 2-to-1 encoding, it's worse. And we can transmit fields. So, massive particles 4-to-1, photons 2-to-1 or better, and no information about exact shape of the state, momentum on which it's centered, or Lorentz transformation is required. Okay, but of course there is a but. Speed momentum entanglement. As you remember, typically the state will look like that. If we have a bunch of such qubits, the nice trick here, forget about momentum, will not work. We have to integrate in our state our momenta for each component. That means phases or bigger angles will depend differently on momentum. And that means we lose this nice thing that the same operator works on everybody. and the flow of life becomes much more complicated. Let's look at one particular example. Again, the simple example, decomposition into spin and momentum part, direct product structure, reduced density matrix, it's just reduced density matrix of a pure state. What happens to our qubit? Look only on this particular problem. Is a nasty, well, not nasty, this is known completely positive transformation. Bit flip, phase flip, and this is the parameter. How strong it is the ratio of spread to momentum, depends on the relative velocity, doesn't blow away even if the relative velocity goes to the velocity of light. Beta is the ratio of velocity to the velocity of light. Pretty normal decoherence looking thing can be dealt with if we know gamma. So to know the gamma, we need to know the shape. We need to know the Lorentz transformation. If we don't know them, then at least in first order approximation, we'll have an additional set of errors at the order of square typical spread, typical momentum. Well, that's about it. So let me summarize. We have natural subsystems. We can fall into them. It's relative information. It's preserved. It's good for you. But as you see, nobody's perfect. So it's not perfect. We can find everything. Well, but this thing looks pretty tasty. So thank you very much for your patience.
What is that thing?
A mouse? Oh. But we have a chance to see something like that tonight, so we may ask the professionals.
Actually, you showed that in order to get separation of the particles, you do need some momentum spread, right?
Yes.
Otherwise, you're in
the case. Otherwise.
So you're always in the case that there is something.
Yes, yes. I just ignore it. Because if I am at the momentum eigenstate, my particle is not localized at all. It's from here to the end of the universe. And, well, that's just nonsense. I just keep...
So you always have these errors from...
Yes, yes. They may be just small, but they're there. Yes?
Structure of the
structure.